So we'd like to explore a little bit about Damodar Leela and relate that to our relationships in this world with each other. And in the spiritual realm, there's many, many emotions. It's not all one, it's not a void, but there's a vast spectrum of emotions and spiritual exchanges. And one of those emotional exchanges that takes place in the spiritual realm is actually anger. And we see in the pastime of Sri Damodar and Mother Yasoda, there was a lot of ecstasy, transcendental ecstasy, in the form of transcendental anger and frustration. And has anyone here ever churned butter? By hand? You've done it, yeah. It's a lot of work, isn't it? It's a lot of work to churn butter and to skim the cream. So it's not easy. So you can just imagine if you churned many pots of butter, such a valuable commodity, especially now butter is so expensive. And just imagine your child went into your refrigerator and you had all this butter that all your hard labor had produced to make this butter, to offer to Krishna, and to serve the Vaishnavas. And your child comes in and just smashes all the pots and just feeds it to all the monkeys. Wouldn't that just... She'd probably be quite frustrated. So Mother Yasoda, she was...
I'd be a little more than frustrated.
Yeah, she was... Mother Yasoda was angry, but it's not like the anger in this material world. In the material world, our anger is contaminated by the modes of material nature. And Srila Prabhupada describes this in the Srimad Bhagavatam, how anger in this material world, in the modes of material nature, it's manifest as something called the Rudra principle. Like when we get angry, influenced by the modes of passion and ignorance, our chest becomes tight, sometimes we clench our fists, and it's just this intense feeling. And actually we lose touch with our higher intelligence when we have that material anger. And it tends to remain within us for a very long time. Whereas on the transcendental platform, anger, Mother Yasoda was exhibiting her anger actually out of love for Krishna. She wanted to correct her child and stop his mischievous behavior. So she was doing it out of love to correct him. So it was a transcendental anger. And similarly, Srila Prabhupada would sometimes chastise his disciples. But Srila Prabhupada could exhibit great anger at 1 minute, and the next minute, it's gone. It's just like they say, hard as a thunderbolt and soft as a rose. Just in a moment, he could change. We get that anger from the modes of material nature. It can stay within us for 20 minutes, for a half an hour. It can stay within us for a day. Sometimes we can develop a type of anger that can remain within us for months or even years. People develop these grudges because of anger. So that's actually very unhealthy. So we would like to explore some ways in which we can move our anger towards the goodness, towards the mode of goodness. So in this pastime with Yasoda and Krishna, she was chasing after Krishna, and Krishna was running, and she was chasing Krishna with a stick, which according to the Vraja Mahima, compiled by Shiva Ramaswamy, it was actually Nanda Maharaj's walking stick. And she was chasing Krishna with this. And Krishna was quite fearful of the stick. And she's trying to catch him, and Krishna's running with great fear. And finally she catches him, and she's wanting Krishna to stop. And Krishna's saying, I'll stop if you put the stick down. Just don't hit me. So Yasoda put the stick down. And during the time when Yasoda was chasing Krishna, she said, you're just like the king of monkeys. You're just feeding the precious butter to all the monkeys. You're just like a monkey. You're like the king of monkeys. And Krishna, he was getting so angry that Mother Yasoda was calling him a monkey. And similarly, when she was binding him, she said, you're just like the king of monkeys. And Krishna got so angry, it's described, he was going to spit. Krishna thought he was so angry at his mother for calling him the king of monkeys. She's always calling me a monkey. And he felt like he was going to spit, but then he caught himself and he thought, if I spit, she might pick up the stick again. So he kind of relented and let her start attempt to tie him. So in the spiritual realm, that anger is there, and it's actually the source of transcendental bliss and pleasure. In this world, our anger tends to be a source of many unpalatable emotions and memories and feelings. So it's important to understand that. Like, as Vaishnavas in Krishna consciousness, we're attempting to come to the mode of goodness. Srila Prabhupada describes, he sets quite a high bar in the 14th chapter of the Gita. He says how devotional service begins at the mode of goodness. That's a very high bar. Because obviously when we have this material anger, it's influenced by the modes of passion and ignorance. So how to elevate ourselves towards the mode of goodness? And that's a great task. And so Srila Prabhupada, he describes how by practice one can develop the mode of goodness. So it's important in our sadhana bhakti, we realize that we need to practice how to integrate Krishna consciousness in our life, that even our disagreements can become exchanges which are actually positive, which are actually beneficial, and which we all grow from. And again, that's not easy because we have this conditioning of the modes of material nature. And so we experience that. It's easy to be polite and friendly with our god brothers or god sisters and everyone in the temple or on Harinam, Sankirtan, because we have that tight association. But sometimes when we're on our own behind closed doors in the Brahmacharya ashram, Brahmacharini ashram, our Grihastha ashrams, closed doors, our lower nature tends to come out because we become overly familiar. So we would like to explore a little bit tonight and also on Saturday some means in which we can try to elevate our interactions more towards the mode of goodness. Because conflict is inevitable, just like we see in the spiritual realm, it's a transcendental pastime. And even Srila Prabhupada, he describes how even our acharyas, sometimes they have differences of opinion on different philosophical points. But he said such differences of opinion are to be considered spiritual because the goal is how to serve Krishna better. So the acharyas, they're not engaging in material anger and endless fighting debates. They're just having philosophical, deep, meaningful philosophical discussions, even though they have different opinions. And so even sometimes they're able to agree to disagree and still love each other because they understand each other and respect each other on a platform of goodness and pure goodness. So we would like to explore this a bit. Go.
So in this material world, conflict is inevitable. We have our internal conflicts, and we have our conflicts with each other because we're all very different. So Krishna likes variety. He likes that we're all different. But he also likes that because we're his parts and parcels, that we can use our differences to work together for him. So we see that Mother Yashoda, she also had this internal conflict. Should I go and grab the milk off the stove, or should I stay here and finish feeding my child? And she's going, I have all these services, which way should I go? And so that's an internal conflict. And very often we experience this also in devotional service because there's so many wonderful things we can do for Krishna. But we can't be everywhere all the time. And so the acharyas explain that when we go internal and we just think, how can I please Krishna, that Krishna within our heart will give us the intelligence on which service that we should do for Krishna at each moment. And so that requires introspection and being able to relate with others also requires a lot of introspection. Because the quality of our relationships with others, it reflects the quality of our relationships with ourselves. So So it starts there, first of all. And then also, the quality of our Krishna consciousness is exemplified in the interactions that we have with others. So if we're not having good interactions with others, we need to go internal and see what is it that I need to look at. And so the first place to start is, you know, in our own hearts, and take responsibility for our side of any conflict that we're somehow or other experiencing. And it's not, are we going to experience conflicts? It's, you know, if, it's, we will. There's no doubt about it. No matter where we are in this material world, there's going to be conflicts. So, first thing is to take responsibility. And then, when we're experiencing a conflict with someone, sometimes we just feel it, and sometimes it's an kind of a battle between two people. Sometimes one person has a conflict and one person could just walk away and doesn't seem to bother them. The other person, they're thinking about it over and over and over again. So either way, for conflict not to build up blockages in our heart with other Vaishnavas, we need to deal with them as soon as possible. And so some attempt at repair is very necessary. Usually we just want to go in our corner and think how right we are. And I'm just right, and, you know, that's that. And we don't go and repair our relationships. So my husband and I, we do a lot of marital therapy. And the research is out that everybody fights, but the couples who repair their fights quickly, they're the ones that have good relationships. It's not like happy couples don't fight. We all fight. It's how we repair and the quality of our repair. So repair is essential. And it's what helps... It's what helps us to process it and get rid of it. So it's no longer in our memory. So there was once one lady, and she was in, I don't know if she was in Slovenia or Croatia. Her name was Bluma... Zagarnik. So she was studying, she was sitting there in a restaurant, and she was watching all the waiters come along and take the orders. And they would just, you know, ask each person, not Kali Yuga waiters, that they put it all on their little iPad. They would just listen. And there would be 4, 5, 6 people, and they'd have all their variations, and, you know, bring me pasta, but, you know, don't put too much tomatoes or whatever. They're remembering all this. Then they come back, and they're giving everybody the right order, and then they're going on to the next table. And she's sitting there watching these waiters go from table to table. And afterwards she says, how do you remember all this? They said, we concentrate on the one table, and when we're finished serving that, we forget all about it, and we move on. They don't carry it with them to the next. So research has found out that when we can process our conflicts, we can forget about them. We don't have to carry them around, you know, in our hearts for the next 20 years. And remember when that person did this to me 25 years ago? And I just, you know. So, you know, we want to try to process these things.
There's an example of that also in this pastime, just prior to the Damodar Leela, when Mother Yasoda left Krishna alone to attend to the pot on the stove that was boiling over. And Krishna, he became very upset. He started crying. And there was a parrot sitting on the balcony of Nanda Maharaja's palace watching this event take place. So Krishna's exhibiting anger, Madhya Soda's going to serve him in some different way, and the parrots are watching. And the parrot started this bit of a conflict. And the male parrots began to say, how could Mother Yasoda do this? She's abandoning our darling Krishna, the king of Braja. He's such a beautiful child. how could she abandon him and leave him alone, crying she should be feeding her child breast milk? And then the female parrot said, well, actually, no, she has this important service to do because she's actually going to do that for Krishna, and she's trying to serve him in another way, so she had to leave him. And they're arguing back and forth of, you know, Krishna's getting abandoned. No, she's serving Krishna in a different way. And then it's described as this great wise owl landed. and according to Nuvraja Mahima, it's described, this owl said to the parrots to resolve the conflict, that sometimes a devotee of the Lord, I think Prabhupada paraphrases this in Bhagavad Gita, that sometimes a devotee of the Lord has different kinds of service to do, and it's difficult to decide which service is more important and which one are you going to put on the side burner. And the parrot says, and so sometimes a devotee might have that dilemma, but because of their devotion, Krishna guides them which is the best service. And all the birds said, yeah, that makes sense. And the conflict ended. So it's similar in our lives. If we can, as Uttama was saying, if we can, when we have these kind of negative interactions, it's very important to repair them. And by repairing them, just like she's saying, how the waiter was able to just process the previous order and then it's forgotten. And similarly, when we have these negative exchanges, if we can acknowledge what we felt, what we experienced, what our need was, what happened, how we can do that better next time, it's processed. And all that negative emotion, you're able to file it in past history and not bring it forward into the future. And that becomes problematic in our relationships. Sometimes we're not able to process past events, and it's almost like we have a scorecard of all the negative things that our friends have done against us.
Just repeating what I just said, anyway.
Okay. And then when something comes up, we bring out the scorecard. And the weight of all the negative things on the scorecard is brought into the current exchange, which not be equal to the past exchange.
So one of the best ways to process conflict is to take responsibility, first of all. So when you feel a need to process a conflict with someone, it's good to explain that that's your goal, so that the other person can, you know, kind of like take a deep breath and listen with attention. Because if you're just kind of doing it in the middle of everything else, they may not understand what you're doing and you may not get a good response. So the first thing is to say, this is my view of what happened. Just to describe, you know, the incident so they know what's going on. And the second part is very important. You have to explain, and this is the story that I made up about it. Because when somebody does something, we can make up a story. It's like we could be going around the room and everybody could be sharing something, and maybe somebody's just a little behind the pillar and I didn't see them and I didn't ask them. So they could go out and they could build up this grudge that she doesn't like me, she thinks I have nothing valuable to say, and that's why she didn't, you know, ask me to speak. So that's the story that I told myself that was going on. But maybe it isn't the interaction at all. Maybe just the pillar blocked, I didn't even see the person, I have no grudges against that person, I had no intent. And so when the person can explain what's going on in their minds, then, you know, it becomes more clear the impact of the interaction. And also we need to take responsibility because we do put meaning to everything. And sometimes it's not the intention. There's a big difference between intent and impact. So maybe I had no intent to ignore that person. But somehow or other, by not seeing her, the impact was that she felt low self-esteem or not important or that I had some grudge against her or whatever. That was the impact, even though it was not my intent.
Because you don't have a judgment.
Yes.
It's important when we explain to our friend or whoever we had this negative exchange with, as Uttam was saying, that you want to say something like, well, the story I was telling myself or the way I viewed it was this way. That makes it easier to receive that message. Because if I said, you did this, you always do that, it comes across as a judgment. And we understand, we understand from our philosophy that if we judge someone for some perceived wrong, we are as guilty as the wrongdoer. Or in the Bible it says, judge ye not, or ye shall be judged. So we can say what we need to say, we can say what we experienced, or what we need, but it's important not to say it as a judgment or a criticism, because that makes it easier for the listener to actually receive that message that we're saying.
So this is the circumstance, this is the story I made up, so we're using I statements, and this is what I felt. Now, when we explain what we felt, if we really want to have a good outcome, it's best to start with the milder feelings and save your heavy feeling to the last. So you could say, you know, I felt disregarded, kind of isolated, and really angry that I'm just not important or something. You know, like you keep the bigger one till the end. And then you ask for what would make the situation better for you. And then you say, and this is what would help me feel better. So it's the circumstance, the story I was telling myself, what I felt, and what I would help me to feel better. Mm-hmm. Quite simple.
And sometimes it can be very helpful if before we speak, if we can internalize what we're feeling and really try to analyze what we are feeling. Just like it describes in the Srimad Bhagavatam, how in the age of Kali Yuga, our finer sentiments are lost. And the result of that, we tend to go to very gross emotions. Like it's very easy to immediately go to anger, whereas in reality, maybe we're not angry. Maybe we just felt frustrated or neglected. But it tends to go to the platform of anger immediately. And like we understand from our philosophy, how anger can be utilized in the service of Krishna, just like Hanuman used his anger against Ravana. And so I might be angry at Uttama, and she might be angry at me, but she's not Sarpanaka and I'm not Ravana. So maybe anger doesn't really fit the description of the feelings we're having in some conflict. Maybe we're just frustrated. That's a lot different than being angry. So it's important to really be sensitive to our own emotions and try to be accurate and not go to the gross emotions. And also there's a great body of research that shows, especially in close relationships, that what couples are fighting about, there's an issue on the table that they're fighting about, but what escalates that to the point of anger and conflict is they don't feel understood. Because when you don't feel understood, you don't feel cared for, and you don't feel loved. And that causes the escalation. So especially because we're bhakti yogis, and we're trying to develop this loving mood of serving Krishna and serving the Vaishnavas, we actually should have this kind of feeling of love for each other. So when we have those kind of negative exchanges, it's very painful. But if we can really examine a little deeper our emotions, maybe I'm not actually angry, I'm just maybe a little frustrated or a little disturbed. And that, again, that can make the message easier to receive.
So then the person listening, so when you're the speaker and you want to share your anxiety, short, sweet, to the point, and a little soft. When you're the person responding, you should offer as much as you can, empathize, give as much help as you can, give as much feelings of security, you should be very giving, because it takes a lot for that person to come to you. So this is a kind of conflict where one person's kind of, I shouldn't say one person only is feeling it, because it's pretty hard. Well, in the circumstance I described, I wasn't even aware of it, right? So in those kind of circumstances, it would be like that. Then other times we have an interaction where we're both kind of feeling it. And it's pretty inevitable that if one person's feeling hurt, the other person's also feeling hurt. And it might be for another reason. And so especially in close relationships like marriage, if I'm feeling, very hurt and upset, it's almost guaranteed that my husband's feeling exactly the same way. It may be for a different reason, and it may be come about differently, but the bottom feeling is we're both feeling unheard, unappreciated, and unloved. And so it may be coming across differently for him, but that pain is still the same. So we can empathize with the pain of the other person. So if I'm feeling some pain, we know that the other person is also feeling some pain. So just being able to come a little bit to the mode of goodness and be gracious enough to reach out and say, this interaction isn't going really well and I'm having pain, so I know you must be having pain, and let's see if we can, do something for it. So when we need to resolve a little bit more complex conflicts, then we both have to be in a calm state of mind and ready to have the conversation. And then we need to both take turns and speak and be heard until we feel that the other person has understood us. So that means that the listener's job is to be curious, ask questions, reflect back what they hear, and let us know that they're understanding exactly what we went through. It doesn't matter that they agree with the circumstances, what happened, their opinion, they might have another, just that they understand how I felt. So when I feel completely understood, then the other person can explain their side, and I can be gracious enough to also be curious, see why they felt that way, how that impacted them, what their needs are. And so that way, when we both thoroughly understand each other, then we can think about coming up with some way in which to take some action to resolve it. But any action or agreements that you come to before you both feel understood probably won't be very long-lasting. Do you want to add something?
I was just going to add that when we have some conflict and we need to speak what we're feeling, that's the easy part. And actually listening, if somebody's approaching us that they're having some difficulty with something we did or said or thought we did or may have said, sometimes receiving that message can be hard. Because the tendency is to listen to reply, not to listen to hear.
Understand.
And to not, listen to understand, and we tend to listen to reply, and we're thinking of rebuttal. So if we think of that in terms of the modes of material nature, if you're explaining your point of view to me, and I'm just thinking of a rebuttal, what mode of material nature is that in? Passion, yeah, it's in the mode of passion. But if I'm actually listening to you, sincerely, I'm trying to understand. I may not agree with you, but I'm really trying to understand how you felt and what you thought about that. I'm sincerely trying that. Obviously, that's more toward the mode of goodness. And so that's what we want to do, is to develop this mode of goodness, because that's actually what Rupa Goswami recommends in this two loving exchanges of revealing your mind in confidence and hearing in confidence. And he says that's a loving exchange and devotional service. So as counterintuitive as it may sound, we may have some big difference of opinion, but we can actually have a loving exchange and devotional service by understanding each other's point of view, even though we totally disagree. I can I can understand where you're coming from, how you feel that way and think that, and I may think different. So in that process of listening, sometimes we have a fear that, well, if I listen to you, I'm going to lose my ideas, my train of thought. But you won't. You won't lose it. You can park it on the side tracks, listen, and then they can listen to you, and you can take back your thoughts. And again, especially as Vaishnavas, because we engage in this activity that Rupa Goswami recommends of revealing one's mind in confidence and hearing in confidence, you know, in a loving devotional exchange, even though we disagree, that's devotional service. And when you engage in devotional service, what happens to the ocean of material existence? It shrinks the amount of water in the hoofprint of a calf. And that makes it easier to either find some solution that works for the both of us or find some way to manage that situation. So even on the material platform, they find that works. I mean, in couple counseling or in business arrangement, if both parties can understand each other, coming to an amicable conclusion becomes much easier based on that mutual understanding. So that's an extremely important part of life in general, but especially in our devotional service, it's very important to have that dynamic so that we have healthy exchanges in our families and communities. Because in reality, when we have negative exchanges, they can be gross or subtle forms of Vaishnava aparad, that we, you know, think ill of each other, which is not actually going to be pleasing to Krishna. So you have this pastime in Srimad Bhagavatam. There was a great... Can I say that? Have time?
We're running out of time.
Okay. Yeah. There's this conflict between Bhima and Draupadi about what to do with Aswatthama after he had been brought by Arjuna to their camp after he had killed Draupadi's sleeping sons. Draupadi wanted him spared. Bhima wanted capital punishment. Both sides gave Vedic arguments. It's described in the Bhagavatam. It was a real tense situation. Krishna manifests four arms to cool everyone off. And it's very interesting. It's described that Krishna gave a hint of the solution to Arjuna. Does anyone know what the hint Arjuna was given? What did Krishna... Anyone know? What was the hint?
To cut his hair?
No, he didn't.
That was what Arjuna chose to do, but it wasn't the hint.
The hint that Krishna gave, and this is really significant, he said, Arjuna, I want you to find something that will satisfy Bhima, Draupadi, and me.
So not so easy.
So Krishna wants to see both parties satisfied. And that's important. That's a very important thing. Because that will please Krishna. And especially if we have that attitude, okay, we have to work this out for Krishna's pleasure. And either we work it out or we agree to disagree and still love each other. And life can go on. But if we carry animosity for months or years, it's A, not healthy physically and devotionally. It's not healthy.
Mm-hmm. So maybe we can take any questions.
Or after the primer.
Mm-hmm. When you speak about the emotions... When you speak about emotions and feelings, is this the same or separate? How this works? How this is connected or not connected?
How's it connected to?
Feelings and emotions.
Oh, feelings and emotions? Feelings and emotions are pretty much the same thing, but they're different than thoughts. So feelings and emotions, yeah, same word.
Hey, Mangi. Like I might say, I'm feeling something about this situation, but in reality, or I could say, you make me feel this. And reality, what I should be saying, when this happened, I had an emotion or feeling. You didn't make me feel that. But the way I interpreted it gave me this experience, this feeling or emotion. So it's important to express that correctly. That
Hare Krishna, what comes to my mind, but I have another question regarding these emotions and feelings. I understand that like emotion is more considered like a state and the feelings like a process, because we can have some emotion in the state and then we, through feelings we process
these continuation of it.
Continuation, yes. That's how I see. But thank you so much for this topic. And regarding conflict, it's very important but also very complex topic. You said
someone could write a whole PhD dissertation on it.
Yeah. yeah, because yes, individual local level of conflict, it's like what you are talking about, but then we can have a society conflict, institutional conflict, mm-hmm. different level, and then different approaches, and maybe sometimes if it's really big one, then mediation is also necessary. There is one scientist, he wrote amazing book, he is also Protestant, but sociologist as well, and he wrote a book which is named Moral Imagination. So when there is a conflicting parties, they are most related to institutional conflict, like in their religious institution, state, or like that. So it's very important how mediator approach to somehow imagine something that's in common for like human race. Or so what they are doing in the same way, what they are doing differently. Mm-hmm. So this sameness is that connecting them and then somehow pacify the situation, and he goes through this process of mediation. It's really inspiring. But what I wanted to ask you, this is my question for you. So we have a different kind to approach to conflict. Some people fight, some people withdraw. Some people dialogue. And sometimes we cannot say radically that always one approach is the best, like dialogue is always, sometimes maybe not. So how we can wisely choose which way we, which we will use in different kind of conflict that can help us to resolve it, because sometimes dialogue doesn't help, fight doesn't help, withdraw that. So how we can manage that, how we can recognize which kind of approach we can choose in a conflict?
I think that depends a bit according to the time and circumstance. Like in research on couples, research shows that some couples tend to fight, like animated and maybe a little loud and boisterous. But research shows that those kind of animated, boisterous, argumentative couples can have healthy relationships if they fight with respect and compassion. They don't demean each other, and they do try to understand each other. They just turn the volume up. And some couples tend to avoid conflict, and they can also have healthy relationships. However, the downside of being conflict avoidant, you don't necessarily resolve things that could help you move forward in your life. So it can be a problem if individuals in a close relationship like marriage, if they have a vastly different style. One is very conflictual, they want to turn up the volume, and the other is very avoidant. They're going to have to learn to find some balance and respect each other. That's very important. So you have to be very sensitive to how whoever you're speaking to is going to receive the message. So we might be used to turning up the volume, but if the person we're trying to speak to is not used to that, it's not going to be productive. So we have to be sensitive to the ears that are receiving our message.
It's probably a little bit of trial and error and sensitivity. And also, like, I don't know if it works. It can work with friends. But we teach couples, when you have to talk about something, like, look at each other. Like, we tend to look down, out the thing. We're all in our own heads. But when we look at the other person, we can attune to their nervous system. And we can see when it's, like, too much or it's penetrating well, you know? So it's not that we don't get signals. You know, so if we're just not, it's not all about me. It's about the connection. And how can I connect with this person? Because that's yoga. is that we want to connect with each other so they can help us connect with God. And humans are wired to connect. Without connection, we don't do well. That's why there's so much depression in COVID. So we are wired to connect. So when we are able to connect by just kind of like feeding back, oh, how is my message impacting this person? I can see from their eyes that it's not going well. Then you can like adjust, right? But if you're just like in yourself and how I'm going to be heard and I'm going to be right, and it's not a dialogue. That's just a monologue.
There's some research that shows that trying to resolve a conflict via these devices is the percentage of chances of resolving conflict.
Zero.
Because you don't have the body language. Even on Zoomers. Zoom is a little bit of body language, but you really need the personal interaction.
Mm-hmm. I also know, I recently hear that two conflicted parties, they are very, very mad at each other, and they didn't have empathy toward each other, really fighting and offending. So this mediator put a little spray in their eyes, a little bit, you know. So they all like, wow, it's painful. So then they start to talk about how it's painful, how it's painful to him, how it's to him. Mm-hmm. So they pacify, then they come together, and then it was like easier. So
yeah.
It's hurtful. That's the question.
I said one thing, as you were saying earlier, and that Protestant, he would use a process to get them to see they do have some common goal. They're just approaching it from completely different angles.
She just has a question.
Yeah.
Okay. My question is a little bit similar. You know, when you were talking, it's like two parties, yeah? Both want to resolve a conflict. Mm-hmm. But I think the most usual one is when only one of the two parties wants to resolve. Oh, only one of the two parties want to resolve, you know, and the other party is like or ignoring or just being in
their own world,
his angry world or something. Mm-hmm. So what to do?
That may be, but it also may be our perception. And sometimes it really takes that open, honest dialogue to find out what's going on in the background. I mean, there,
you know, like there may be some people don't want to talk. You know?
They don't want to talk because there's too much pain.
Yeah.
And so if somehow or other we can find some way, like when he says, you know, there's something I want to talk about. You think I'm like, what did I do? Oh boy, this is going to be stressful, right, isn't it? But I've learned, you know, that if I can just sit down and hear, and if he can present it softly, usually we come to be more closely connected. So I think people avoid because, number one, they don't have experience of working out conflicts well. And number two is their emotions are very blocked because of so much pain and trauma. And so, you know, sometimes it takes a little longer. But, you know, if we can just have empathy, you know, then gradually we can, you know, wear things away a little bit. And also, resolving conflict is one side of it. And the other side is we have to continue to carry on and build our friendships. So when, because that's what, you know, our activities in Krishna consciousness, kirtan, festivals, going on Harinam, reading together, that builds our friendships and having good interactions, helping another person, doing something for them. Then when we have this, you know, big account of good interactions between us, then when it's time to resolve some conflict, it doesn't seem so momentous because we have this memory of, you know, good interactions. Mm-hmm. So just because we're having conflict with someone, we'd want to try to also have good interactions. And I was just thinking about how when they were fighting over with Mr. Nair to get the temple in Mumbai, and there was so much going on, they'd make one step to get the temple, and then Mr. Nair would do something, and, you know, it was just, I think it was Giri Raj Swami and somebody else, they were just you know, it's so much turmoil over this conflict. And Prabhupada could see Giriwash Swami, whoever it was, just standing in kirtan, because he's just overwhelmed by all this.
Bhagavan?
Uh-huh. Yeah, Bhagavan. He was overwhelmed by all the conflict. And Prabhupada's going, dance in artik. Like, you don't just think about it all the time. We do positive things also, so that we're in a better frame of mind, that we can, you know, resolve.
Right. He said, even though you're having so many problems, you should dance in kirtan.
All right.
And what about the others? You know, like, some people don't want to face, you know, conflicts. They just want to stay in the positive. But, you know, these conflicts always come up, you know, because you didn't resolve them.
Yeah.
So how?
So, you know, it's again making friendship and saying, you know, I'd like to have a better relationship with you. Maybe you think it's positive, but I'd like to have it better. And just little bits, you know, in a soft way to encourage people.
And it becomes complicated if conflicts have been going on for a long time and there's different levels of conflict and different
layers.
You have to agree to just work on one aspect at a time. Don't try and solve everything at once. If there's multiple layers, just solve one point at a time and then gradually others. Because trying to solve everything at once won't be productive.
Mm-hmm. So on Saturday, we were going to spend a little bit more time discussing how to help our higher selves overcome our lower selves so that we can have better communication. So we will focus on Saturday on better communication. Did you want to add anything?
That's good.
That's good. So compassionate communication. Right. So thank you very much.
All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
All glories
to Lord Damodar.
Yes.
And
all glories to Mother Yashoda.
Yes. And her whipping stick and the rope.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai.